On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, we ask, what should the Raiders spend their newly acquired $25 million in cap space on? We ask, does Ndamukong Suh fit with the Raiders? We make sense of the running back room and also the context required to make sense of the Colin Kaepernick reporting. And we love when you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares. The Raiders!
Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. RJ Clifford, Juan Soto, let's have some fun today. Fresh off the IR, Juan Soto.
Ready.
You look rested. You look fit.
My booty hole ain't rested, man. That thing was taking a beating.
Woo! Boy, was your boyfriend back in town?
No, from the other direction.
Oh. The hamster was coming out.
The gerbil was trying to get out. No, I had a rough freaking week, man. So I started the weekend, had a pretty bad sinus infection Saturday and Sunday. And my nose has been broken a couple times, like maybe four times. So my sinus infections are really bad. Okay. So when I get them, it's debilitating. So that was the weekend into Monday. Tuesday, I'm feeling fine, whatever. And I get home and I'm still dealing with the sinus infection a little bit. I'm like, I'm just going to stay home. And I have the most explosive diarrhea I've had that I can remember. I'm like, where did that come from? I didn't have
just,
a stomach
just
ache.
Spackling the porcelain.
Just, oh, it was awful. Yeah. I'm like, wow, man, I didn't eat anything there. Like, I don't understand what happened. I didn't have a stomach ache. And then Wednesday, I just kept having freaking more and more freaking shit. I'm like, what the fuck? Puking now? I'm like, what the hell? I'm getting these. I work in a warehouse. I run a manufacturing plant. And it's cold in the mornings. I have a sweatshirt on, a hoodie, whatever, a beanie. And my neck is sweaty. I'm sweating. And I'm like, I'm not hot. It's cold in here. And like cold sweats. And from Thursday,
you were watching
to Friday,
Alex Leatherwood tape, weren't you?
I was trying
that's
to.
Why,
yes.
That's why you were trying to shit your pants and vomit everywhere. And yeah,
so
that makes sense.
Thursday at 8 a.m. till about maybe noon on Friday, I shit every hour on the hour, just waking up and shitting. Boom.
The clockwork.
Boom. Like every hour. I'm like, what the hell? And at that time, it was like already 4 days. It was just water and foam. It was terrible.
I'm glad you're giving me the texture, the seismic shift of it all.
Yeah.
What about the flavor? What about the taste? What did it taste like?
Nah, I didn't taste it.
I need all the experiences.
I mean, whatever diarrhea crackers and Pedialyte and bananas taste like, that's what it was.
Well, you look thinner.
I did. I lost like 7 pounds last week, man. Yeah. So I'm feeling good about
it. That's kind of like me. Like every time I do a Vegas trip, I lose like 5 pounds. But that's just because I'm just like raging and like boozing and not eating. So I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm 5 pounds lighter. But I didn't lose 5 pounds of fat. I lost 5 pounds of vitamins.
Yeah, 5 pounds of good you stuff. Know what
I mean? Yeah, that's like 5 pounds of like magnesium, iron. Yeah, sanity and shame.
I was trying to chug that Pedialyte and eat bananas and get some salt from the crackers and stuff. It just wasn't staying in, man.
Well, good. Well, now that all of our listeners and viewers have thrown up their breakfast or turned this off, let's get to our question of the day.
Hey, man, it's life, bro. What do you want?
Life. So, with the contracts of Carl Nassib and Corey Littleton coming off the books today, we're recording this June 1st, Wednesday. Money's off the books. That's almost $20 million in cap space post June 1 designation, on top of the $5 million-ish in cap space we had before. The Raiders have $25 million in cap space. With the capital So the question of the day, we'll pin it at the top of the comment section. Make sure to leave your comment below. What should the Raiders do with the $25 million in cap space? That ain't no chump change. Like, I know it's the NFL, right? And it's like, you know, $1 million is essentially pennies. But $25 million, that gets you a lot.
A lot.
One season, that... Other than a quarterback, you can get basically the best player to any position, more or less, for a year for that kind of money. So,
look,
what should we do?
at this point in the free agency, if you're still out there or if you're a late cut, these guys are probably not going to sign a long-term agreement. So you could get a guy on the cheap or a couple guys. I mean, we could get potentially a couple of high-level contributors to our team. You know, I don't suspect that we're going to make a couple of any big signings right away. I think we'll want to keep some of that. I think Ziegler's a little bit more diligent than that, and he'll want to keep some cap space for like training camp cuts and stuff like that. So
but 25 mil,
that's a lot of money.
You don't need to hang on to like eight, you hang on to seven, right?
Yeah,
some injuries, you can get a backup for that, you know. You can get any back, like any emergency player, you can get for 5 mil, right? But 25 mil.
Yeah, we can and especially like for example, let's just say for example, we're going through training camp and it's like just things aren't popping with this offensive line. Like we just need one guy, like a freaking mercenary guy who's been in the league a while, not a huge name, but he's a steady Eddie guy. We know we could plug him in, he's gonna be good. And we can give our younger guys a chance to kind of, you know, get a little bit more seasoning. Mm-hmm. Those guys could be out there for $2 million, $3 million, like nothing, you know? So definitely we can get some impact players in positions that
like we George need. Carlin said, I never gone out there and banged 110, but one night I went out and banged five twos.
Five good twos.
We can get a bunch of great twos, right? We can get a half dozen twos if we need to. So
hey, look at Perryman last year was a good two. We got made a late trade for him, and look what happened that. Like, I mean, these are the type of guys that are out there late. We got him late because he was injured most of the preseason, so or most of like the offseason. So yeah, out there.
I did a poll question on YouTube on this one. With $25 million in cap space, what should the Raiders spend it on? And I put a couple ideas up there. I have some glaring misses in there, but these are the ones I think are more realistic. Extend Hunter Renfro. That was by far the most popular pick. 66% of you said extend Hunter Renfro. A tackle like a Darrell Williams or a Brandon Shell. Mm-hmm. Neither one of them are like Pro Bowl caliber guys, but certainly better than Leatherwood.
Better than what we got. Yeah.
Better than what we got. A cornerback, Chris Harris Jr. or Joe Hayden type thing. And there's some, I know it sounds kind of crazy, but Odell Beckham Jr. and Emmanuel Sanders are out there. Mm-hmm. I know it's like, no, we don't need more pass catchers. I'm like,
yeah, we do.
We could get, it's not overkill to get Odell. It really isn't. Like you got Devontae number one, Odell number two, Waller at tight end, and then Renfro in the slot. And also like, you know, you never want to think this way. You never want to put it out there. Knock on wood. But we're only one injury away from a pass catcher from having a really, really great pass catching unit to having a, slightly better, you know, a better than average one, right? Like, you know, Waller misses, you know, six games again, you know, the way that defenses are allowed to just beat the crap out of Hunter Renfro and referees to just let him, like, you know, and Odell's coming off major ACL surgery. So it's not going to cost us all $25 million to get him for like a deal, you know?
And even if you sign him for the equivalent of like what, $15 million for the year, mm-hmm. you're not going to spend 15 full million because he's not going to play the entire year. He's going to be prorated for the games he plays. I am not on board with this extend Hunter because, I mean, I'm on board with extending Hunter Renfro, but why would you spend any of this cap on that? You bonus money him up this year and then let it hit the cap next year. Why would you want it to hit the cap this year? You don't have to make the contract hit the cap this year. Why would you do it that way? I don't know. That makes sense.
Well, I don't think we do anything with Hunter Renfro this year. I think we wait till next year. We give him his extension at the end of the year, right? So not this like fifth year, 1 year thing. There's like, no, we're, you know, you're gonna be a Raider for a long time and here's you know, 5 year deal or whatever it's gonna be. And we do that then. So, but again, we both disagree. 66% of voters said that's what we should do. So I think that goes to show how much people love Hunter Renfro, but also maybe a little lack of the knowledge of the finances of it all.
That's what I was going to say. How little they understand how contracts work in the NFL.
So it's either, you know, shore up our weak spot, which is tackle, shore up our other kind of weak spot, which is corner, juice up our strong spot, which is pass catchers.
You can never have too many pass catchers.
Never have too many. You never have too many corners either. So All right, Soto, is there a position that you want filled in? Is there a player that you've got your eyeball on? Is there, I don't know.
No, I don't have a specific player because they're, at this point, although OBJ is probably the most dynamic of the pass catchers out there, we don't know what he has right now.
Yeah,
coming off an injury, so there's a few guys out there.
Not like an early season injury; it was like Super Bowl torn ACL.
Yeah, last game of the year torn ACL. Yeah, it wasn't even in the first quarter he did it. He could have like, no, I'm just kidding. Same day, but offensive line is a place that I know we have a lot of offensive linemen, but. Fuck it. If we can get a guy that's better, that can make us better, of course. Get an offensive lineman, get more. You can always use, you can never have enough DBs or offensive linemen. You can never have enough depth there. You'll never quality depth. Look at what happened with Cincinnati last year. They had a serviceable tight end, dynamic running game, and three elite pass catchers. And look what they were able to do with a porous offensive line. If you have the weapons and you can get your weapons the ball in good situations, it's always better to have more, especially pass catching weapons. So I wouldn't mind getting another pass catching weapon, and I wouldn't mind spending more on the offensive line.
It's a catch 22 for me because the Josh McDaniel, I've been studying a little bit. Doing my homework, some of my own study, been watching some tape, Don't Lie. You know,
they did a really good episode on some of his stuff. I like
pulling it from all my normal spots, right? Watch a little tape, you know, read up on McDaniels a little bit. This is the weird catch 22 because that style of passing offense that Josh McDaniels has is if you have a corner in press coverage, you immediately audible to a go route if it's a fast guy, right? If someone's trying to press coverage Davante Adams or Darren Waller, this is what's going to happen. Derek's going to look at Devontae. Devontae's going to look at Derek, and they're going to read each other's minds, and Devontae's going to do a go route, right? Because he's going to beat press coverage on 99% of corners, right?
Mm-hmm.
So to be able to go deep like that, you got to have the protection to do it, which if our O-line is, you know, we're being really optimistic to think our O-line is going to be average or better, right? It's going to take a lot of optimism and a lot of coaching up and a lot of exceeding expectations. A
lot of coaching up.
And so you want to have an Odell Beckham Jr., a speedster, right? A guy that was, let's throw those verts, baby. That's like what Derek Carr does so well. But if you don't have the line to do it, then you've kind of restricted some of your play calling. But then if you spend all your resources on the line to be able to do that, you can't afford the Odells of the world. So it's this weird catch 22 of where are you allocating your resources, which is why I think they're going to go with like an Odell or an Emmanuel, because it's looking like McDaniels and Ziegler, instead of trying to be a 7.5 at everything, they're like, all right, we're going to be a 10 in passing offense and on pass catchers, and then we'll deal with a mediocre O-line, right? Same thing with defense. Yeah. On defense, they're like, look, we're going to have the best D linemen in football, right? Our D line are going to be absolutely nuts, and then we'll see if our DBs, and hopefully they'll be able to give the DBs some time to, you know, opposite of some time to be able to work, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think they might go another weapon. I don't think they're done with their offensive weapons.
I don't think they're done either, and that's why I said it's like the same dynamic that you said. That's the two position groups that I was looking at. You can, and I want to be clear here. We don't have to get the equivalent of an OBJ of an offensive lineman for it to be an improvement.
Yeah.
We can get a middle of the road, steady Eddie type offensive lineman and have him be markedly better than what we currently have on the roster. And that's really what you're looking for. At this point right now, you're not really looking to add a bunch of depth per se. You're looking to see where you can improve. Because these guys, for one reason or another, they're not, let's say, if they got released, a player is not that caliber to be paid as much as he was being paid. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean he's bad. He's just not as good to be paid that much as he was. So he was cut, and now he's available. So he can still be an upgrade to what you've had. And maybe he's not a number one anymore, but he's a good number two or, a 1A maybe, or a good two. Or if you're a lineman, he's not the rock solid starting left tackle guy that you have, but he's a good, he maybe played well on the right side or whatever. What you're looking for right now is not really to add depth. You're looking to add like good starters, like good cheap starters right now.
So that's the question of the day. What should the Raiders do with the $25 million in cap space? Maybe it's a player, a specific player. Maybe it's just the best guy in a position. Maybe it's 24/7 limo drivers for all Raiders players, so we don't get any more DUIs.
Hummer limos.
Maybe it's a private jet, so the Autumn Windbags can go from game to game without having to go through security.
I'm up for that.
Go wild, baby. What should the Raiders do with the $25 million in cap space? Comment section down below. We pinned it. You know what to do. So the big rumor this week, Ndamukong Suh, 35 or 36. Still pretty good. Still a pretty good defensive tackle. He hasn't missed a game since 2011. He's only missed two games his entire career. He's had six sacks each in the past two seasons. Not as an end, as an interior defensive player. And 32 combined quarterback hits. Now, he's been rumored to go to the Bucs, Browns, and Raiders. The Bucs just signed, rumored, right? Again, we're flagrantly spreading unsubstantiated rumors, right? Just irresponsible speculation is what we're doing right now.
As Keyshawn Johnson would say, we're germ spreading right now.
Yeah. The stuff that gave Soto diarrhea all week, we're spreading with our sneezes, right?
Explosive.
But he's out there. And again, we're talking about how the defense wants to just be like insanely good up front. Ndamukong Suh can help that, right? So the Bucs just signed Akeem Hicks. Now, he's not an interior defensive lineman. He's an end, but they gave him $10 million. It makes it less likely that they'll re-sign Suh. Mm-hmm. The Browns, according to a tweet by Browns reporter Brad Stainbrook, source, Bucs and Raiders still in on defensive tackle in Ndamukong Suh. If he comes to the Raiders, he's going to have to learn to pronounce his name correctly. Talks are ongoing with Las Vegas, while Tampa Bay will let all the options die down first. Browns have backed off. Browns are out. Tampa Bay is in a wait and see. So via the rumors, via the speculation, Ndamukong Suh is, or the Raiders are the number one team looking at Ndamukong Suh. Now we got The last three contracts he had have all been 1 year contracts, right? Mm-hmm. With the Bucs. $9 million, $8 million, $9 million. We have $25 million. Do we go after Ndamukong Suh?
Yes.
Okay.
I think we do. You have to take a look at beyond the numbers when you're looking at somebody like Ndamukong Suh. You have to take a look at what Ndamukong Suh does as a player, the attention that he garners, and what that attention will do for the players around him, and how that fits into what Patrick Graham wants to do defensively. I think right now, more so than the money, because the money is going to be there whether Ndamukong Suh wants to go with the Raiders or whether he wants to stick around with the Bucs, whatever, right? It's going to be the same money, around the same. He needs to feel comfortable that the system and how he's going to be used is going to be something that's going to allow him to keep his value into the following year. Because he's going to get paid very similar, whether it's Tampa or in Vegas. It's about, he knows what he's looking for and how he's going to be used. Because Todd Bowles, same system, right? In Tampa. How he's going to be used in Vegas, that's, you know, how is that going to affect his play, his numbers, stuff like that. So I think it's something that we should look into depending on what plan we have for the money, because we could have different plans for the money to up other position groups. Cause I mean, our defensive line is solid as it is right now. And it does have some depth up the middle. We drafted two guys that are pretty much carbon copies of guys that we signed earlier in the off season.
Hankins.
Yeah. So we have a lot of depth there. So what are you going to do with the guys you just signed? I mean, if it was me, if I'm able to say, okay, this guy now becomes our best defensive interior defensive lineman, bar none, I think it's that's the type of guy you want to get. You want to get a guy that's going to be that guy at the position where you sign him. Mm-hmm. Again, studs and duds. You get those studs. This is a stud season right now. You go after the studs. And then after late into the training camp where you get the guys, oh, this guy got cut, that guy got cut. Those are the kind of the dud deals. But right now is stud season. So get you a guy that can be that stud. This is going to be the best player at that position that you sign right now.
It also tell me that it gets hard to gauge what, like as a player and as an agent, right? Like you're saying, because at first I was going to disagree with you because Ndamukong Suh is the pure, just like money guy. Whoever pays me the most, I'm going there. Don't care the scheme. Don't care the coach. Don't care the teammates. I'm looking for number one and I'm going to be me, right? That's been Ndamukong Suh's whole career, right? Who's ever going to pay me the most? I don't care about anything else. But there is a point to it where he doesn't want to go someplace where he's going to look so shitty that the next season he gets paid nothing. But at 35, 36, I think I think he'd go to a team that says, hey, I'll give you $8 million and this is a terrible scheme for you. I think he'd take that over a team that offers $7 million and it's a great scheme for him. If it's a tie, I think he's going to go scheme, but at his age, it's like, I'm just going to get as much money as I can. So if the Raiders do sign Ndamukong Suh, it also tells me what that front's going to look like a little bit more, right? Because mm-hmm. if you've got Max Crosby, Chandler Jones, Ndamukong Suh, and Jonathan Hankins, you probably want all four on the field and on important downs.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Like they're going to rotate, but like you got those guys. You know, it's third and long, and you need to hold them to a field goal. You're just like, all right, take a seat, Sue. Like, no, you're all going to be out there. So
you're going to have $30 million in a $30 million defensive line. I mean, $35 million defensive line. You want those guys to be out there when it matters.
And at that price point, if they don't make a serious go for him, I think that tells us a little bit about the scheme. That's going to be a lot of 3-4. Or they're just doing like a lot of rotation with those defensive tackles where it's like there's not even really a true starter. It's just like rotate, fresh legs, something like that. Because at that price point, his availability, the way that we focus on the defensive front, he just seems to be a perfect – like the more I think about it, the more of a perfect fit I think he is.
Mm-hmm. It's all going to depend on what Graham wants to do and because honestly – the way it looks right now and from the players that we've gotten in the offseason and the players that we've drafted, a lot of weight is being placed on fit, on scheme fit. So you're getting a good player, but also a player that fits your scheme. It's going to be a good player for you. It's not just that this guy's great. We'll figure out what to do with him, which is what the old regime would do. And like sometimes you get a mismatching piece or you're asking a guy to do things that maybe he can't do. Like a Bryan Edwards. He was never that separation guy. That was really never him. He was the jump ball, big receiver guy when in South Carolina. And he can do that. And he's shown that he can do that. But when you're asking him to do things that he's not really good at, or he hasn't shown me that he can do, we saw that he just wasn't able to do it. So scheme fit is going to be huge. If Graham can see the scheme fit, I know some players are scheme independent. They're just going to be ballers wherever you put them. But again, what's the plan for the money right now? What are you looking to shore up? What else? What other irons are in the fire?
So we'll see what happens with Ndamukong Suh.
Ndamukong, I love that name.
Ndamukong. If he becomes a Raider, it'll be the first time I've like tried to pronounce his name.
Ndamukong.
Ndamukong.
No, that's not it.
That's what his girlfriend calls him. Dong the Kong.
Dong Kong.
So the Raiders running back room is loaded. It is full, including the fullbacks. The Raiders currently have 10 running backs on the roster.
Jace.
Josh Jacobs, Kenyon Drake, Zamir White, Britton Brown, Amir Abdullah, Brandon Bolden, Trey Regis, and then the two fullbacks, Jacob Johnson, Sutton Smith.
That's 9.
And then they've got the secret weapon that we'll get to more specifically, McCormick, mm-hmm. from the undrafted free agent from University of Texas.
San Antonio. I mean, they have him, but they don't have him.
Yeah, he's on like, he's not in the room. He's like elf on the shelf, you know? I mean,
he'll still be in the room, but he's just not going to be able to play.
Yeah, he's going to be in the room with a cast on, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like this is the perfect example. And people are saying, like, wow, the running back, like, why do you have 10 guys on the, you know, it's like, well, you know, it's OTAs. Like, you're going to run through them. Who do you want? Like, who's going to do what? What? Mm-hmm. I feel like someone like Brandon Bolden is kind of just there to, like, teach everyone the scheme. You know, he's like, just like, hey, Josh McDaniels, like, hey, here's a signing bonus. Like, teach the young guns my scheme. You know, just like,
he might surprise you. What if he, you know, looks really good? Who knows?
Or maybe he looks really good, right? But he's the old guy, right?
Yeah.
The old grizzled veteran, if you will.
Grizzled.
But it's such a diverse group of guys. Young, old,
what you want.
Yeah, which is the Josh McDaniels system, right?
Yeah.
And so I've been talking forever about how the Raiders are poised to not sacrifice the now to win later, to not sacrifice the later to win now, but for sustained success. Mm-hmm. Young guys coming in. We got our season starters. Who on our team over 30 is a starter other than Derek Carr? Like, off the top of my head, I can't think of one.
How old is Perryman? Oh, there's Chandler Jones.
Chandler Jones. Carr.
If Denzel Good starts.
Good starts, he's 32. But that's what I'm saying. Is Good's we're not even sure if he's going to be a starter. Like, there's only two surefire starters that are over 30, right? Young team, which is what you want, right? A young, good team. And so we're in a great position to just keep winning, right? To keep the wheel turning successfully. You draft young guys, you keep the ones that are successful, you pay the guys you need to, and they get too expensive, you trade them and move on, and you keep the circle of life turning.
Yep.
The running back room is the perfect example of that. You've got two expensive guys in Josh Jacobs and Kenyon Drake, which actually aren't as expensive as I thought. Their combined cap it next season is only $7.5 million.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Which is nothing nuts, right? Like, it's, you know, I thought it'd be a lot worse. Not that bad, right? And that's probably running RB1, RB2. I'd say, I think it's safe to
more
say.
More than likely.
Most likely. Those guys are the two most touches at anybody. And then you've got a Brandon Bolden, seasoned guy that may or may not make the team, but he's in the mix. You've got your fullback. We're only going to keep Johnson. Sutton Smith's not going to stick around, right? And then you've got these rookies, and they all serve different purposes, right? So you've got Zamir White, who I think it's safe to say he's kind of poised to be next year's starter, not this season, but the following season. I think it's right now, with the information we have, that's most likely.
Yep.
With Josh Jacobs' contract coming up and Kenyon Drake's contract coming up. You've got him kind of just learning the ropes, you know? He'll get a couple carries this season. He'll see some action for sure, right? Especially, you know, as we know, Josh Jacobs can't stay healthy, so he'll get some work going. And they've already got the wheels turning, right? We got the starters for this year. They're going to be gone next season. The guys are going to play next season. They're learning this season. A bunch of rookies with different skill sets. We're all kind of taking flyers on, like drafting Britton Brown from UCLA, like so late. It's like, if he makes the team, like, they must have big plans for him, blah, blah, blah. And then McCormick, which is this weird wild card. He's on injured reserve. University of Texas, San Antonio, broke like every record, every rushing record for that college. He's on injured reserve for the whole season. So the next season, you've got this guy with a crazy ceiling. Like, his ceiling's through the roof. And he's there. That's what I'm loving the most about this McDaniels and Ziegler system is we got, not only do we have this season figured out, but we've already plugged into the equation seven other possibilities for the next 2 and 3 seasons for our starters.
Yep.
Instead of like, I'm going to lock down Saquon Barkley $50 million for 4 years. It's no, we've got seven guys that are all kind of in the machine, and the best one that comes out, we get. And we're only going to have to pay a third round draft pick type salary, an undrafted free agent type salary, a seventh round pickup type salary. This is the running back room is the perfect example of the McDaniel-Ziegler system plugging in. It's running back, so it's like the easiest one to do it because they're a dime a dozen, but it's the perfect example of it. Just plugging different guys in at different stages of their career and let them decide who the starters are. It's brilliant, Matt. Like, it's like matchmaking in combat sports. Like you're matching guys up to hopefully one guy become, you know, fights for a title in three fights. Like you're putting running backs in position to figure out who your starter is going to be for the next 2, 3, 4 years without having to pay a monster salary for a monster RB1.
Yeah, that's the whole Josh McDaniels scheme. He doesn't like that huge bell cow back because he's aware that running back is the most off-injured position. It's the lowest, you know, lifespan in the NFL is a running back. So they get hit the most, they get hit the hardest, they get the most wear and tear. So he doesn't need one guy that does a lot of things really, really, really good. He needs a couple of guys that do different things, that specialize in different things, but can also maybe do one or two other things pretty good too. So you can have some mix and match. But he wants a lot of those guys. So if there's a guy that, let's say, isn't an RB1 because of X, but he can do Y and Z really well, that's a perfect fit for the system that Josh McDaniels wants to run because, okay, I will only ask you to do what you're good at. I won't ask you to do a lot of what you can't do. That way I don't have to pay you a ton. If you get hurt, I have another guy waiting in the wings who can do what you can do, probably just as good, maybe not as good, but pretty good. And I'm not going to lose a lot. And you see a lot of these running backs, like what running back out there that makes a ton of money is worth it. Derrick Henry got hurt. Christian McCaffrey's always hurt. Saquon Barkley's always hurt. Zeke has been hurt. It's like stupid. Like these guys who have gotten all this huge money, Todd Gurley, when he got his deal, fucking hurt. Like, I mean, he's been through it. McDaniels has been through it, and he has, okay, I know what I need out of my backs. I know I can find guys that specialize in certain things. And I don't have to pay them a ton of money. So I want 5, 6 of them.
The downside of the strategy, I like the strategy, and you're right. Like I'm saying do the strategy, but every strategy has an up and downside.
True.
The downside of the strategy is it takes up a lot of roster space, right? Mm-hmm. So like instead of having 3 running backs on your roster, he's probably going to need 5. He's probably going to need 5 guys on the roster. Like, who's going to be on the active roster next season? Jacobs, Drake.
Johnson, Zeke.
White.
Yeah, Zeus and Johnson, probably the
Johnson.
Fullback.
And then maybe, and they'll be one of the fifth. Bolden, Brown. One of those guys will probably be a fifth one. Because, like you said, they're all, he wants guys that are so specialized that if a guy goes down, like it really limits your offense, right? So you need to have guys that can kind of fill those roles. So that's the one downside is they're probably going to carry 5 running backs if you count the fullback. Now they'll stash, you know, 2 of them on the practice squad, right? I bet you Britton Brown is just destined for the practice squad.
Yeah.
Destined for the practice squad. And that's not even counting McCormick, who's on injured reserve. So like they could, theoretically, like they'll probably have 5 guys on the sign 5 running backs, McCormick on injured reserve, and then Brown on practice squad. Like 7 guys, right? So I still love it. It's cost efficient. The downside is, and this is not just Josh McDaniels, but also Patrick Graham's the same way. I want a ton of DBs. I want a ton of defensive tackles to rotate. Josh McDaniels, I want a ton of running backs and a ton of blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay, you only get 53 guys on the roster. So like that's the one downside of having this really intricate and flexible, roster is that one position is going to be limited. Like we're going to be down to like maybe 3 linebackers or, something. Like there's going to be a very, very, very limited position at some point.
Yes. But if that's in that same tone, you're never going to see in like a Josh McDaniels team a special teams specialist. Everybody who plays special teams, like you know the names because they play snaps. Mm. That's one of the reasons, one of the reasons why I think Bryan Edwards was moved because he doesn't play special teams. If you're a backup for Josh McDaniels, you're going to play special teams, right? So you may use one or two more spots in that sense, but you're not going to have that special teams only type guy. So it kind of maybe balances it out a little bit in that respect.
Daniel Carlson's going to have to play a little safety.
Well, you know, don't be that smart ass. But
I get what you're saying.
Yeah. So everybody, if you're not a starting like main guy on a Josh McDaniels team, you're going to play special teams and you're going to play a lot. So that can kind of temper that a little bit. There's always got to be a plan from Graham. If you know, I'm down to two linebackers. Well, guess what? I'm going to, you know, pull one of my safeties into a linebacker role and call defenses that way. We're going to figure it out. You know,
I almost want Jonathan Abram to not be a starter just to watch him on kick coverage. Like imagine him.
He would last. Like kick would last coverage. 2 weeks before he blows his shoulder.
Yeah,
out.
But it'd be amazing 2 weeks.
You know him he will.
50-yard sprint, just trying to kill somebody. God awesome. Damn. That's all he wants to do. Run that's as all, fast as he can and hit somebody.
Hit somebody. Yeah, well, I mean, he's
the he doesn't, the have, to he doesn't have to cover anybody, right? Doesn't have to defend any passes. It's just run as fast as you can.
And everything's right in front of him. Yeah, everything's right in front. All downhill. Yeah. So I mean, it's not a huge. I don't think it's a huge deal, the running back thing, because these guys are all going to play special teams, mm-hmm. and that's why you don't see guys that are like a lot older as backups. That's probably one of the reasons why Bolden is probably not going to make the team, is because he's a little bit older and he's probably not going to be the best on special teams.
He's there just for the preseason to teach the guys the system. That's what I'm telling you. Like, I think that's the way it's going to.
But
go.
All these other guys, these guys are, you know, just magnets for special teams.
So Colin Kaepernick back in the news. We talked about it last week. He got a tryout.
He did.
And he did. He tried out with the Raiders. Mark Davis said, yeah, we'd give him a tryout. No problem. And they did. And in typical McDaniels and Ziegler fashion, and also kind of Raiders fashion, they're very nil on the details. But we've seen a couple reports leak out. Now, before I show these tweets, bear in mind, ask yourself this. Here's like a journalism quiz for everybody. When a piece of information comes out, ask yourself, where do I think this came from? Right? Where do I think it came? Did it come from the player specifically? Did it come from the team? Did it come from the agent? Did it come from somewhere else? Like, ask yourself that question. Like, who does this benefit? And then where do I think it came from? So there's been two reports that came out, and they're very little, they're not even really reports, they're just tweets about Colin Kaepernick. Here's the first one. Jeremy Fowler of ESPN was told two things stood out in Colin Kaepernick's workout with the Raiders: arm strength and good overall conditioning, which makes sense. He's always had a strong arm and always been a good athlete. Workout was largely considered a positive. Let's see where it goes from here. Ian Rappaport also on Colin Kaepernick's workout with the Raiders: sounds like it went well and he impressed. The door is open. .. This oozes, and I'm not saying they're wrong. Again, every time I say, like, let's look at what these reporters are saying and why they're saying what they're saying, I'm not saying Jeremy Fowler and Ian Rappaport are frauds or shills or stating wrong information. I'm just saying this oozes Kaepernick's management saying this is how it went. Because you know Josh McDaniels didn't talk to the media, you know? You know, he didn't like Josh, like Dave Ziegler didn't like call up Jeremy Fowler immediately and say like, hey, two things stood out, arm strength and conditioning, right? Like that didn't happen. This oozes it came from the agent. No, it could very well be true, right? There's nothing groundbreaking here, right? We know he has good arm strength. We know he's an athlete that's been working out. But this just sounds to me straight from Kaepernick's agent, straight to ESPN.
Yeah, and honestly, like, I mean, you're saying the given, like, oh yeah, we know he's in shape and we know he has a strong arm. Well, we haven't seen it in a while. And those were the two big questions that people were asking, like, how is he going to look? Has he been working out? I mean, we know he looks physically, he looks fit, but is he in shape, right?
Yeah.
And how does his arm look? Because he's a quarterback. So those just happened to be the two things that impressed.
Yeah.
Were his conditioning and his arm strength. So yeah, it looks like it's a plant, like a fed headline. And whatever, man, play the game, and we'll see what happens. I don't fault anyone that's involved for doing it.
And I don't doubt, and I'm not saying that the reports are wrong. I'm not saying, you know,
yeah, we don't know, but
it's just flagrantly talking. Saying a lie. I'm just saying, like, look at it through those, like, you need to give yourself that reference point, right? Like, you know, Josh McDaniels didn't talk to the media. You know, Dave Ziegler didn't talk to the media and say this. No, it could have been a scout that wants to get a job at ESPN. Like, there's other ways, but generally information that comes out, it's out for a reason. And it's because someone wants that information out. So with that said, I'm still willing to move forward, Soto, assuming that Colin Kaepernick isn't completely shot, right? He's been sitting on the couch for 5 years, eating Doritos, getting fat. His arm's just a limp noodle now. I'm willing to move forward.
I feel triggered, you know. You're describing me. So a cow's eating Doritos, limp noodle. Like, wait a second.
He's been getting in shape just like you. He had the same disease you did. So I'm willing to move forward, Soto, assuming that Kaepernick's still decently there. Mm-hmm. Does this workout do anything for you or inspire any sort of thought that Kaepernick's going to wear the silver and black next season?
A little bit, because
doesn't hurt.
The first hurdle has been cleared already. All right. He can physically make the throw still.
Yep.
He's physically capable of playing the position of backup quarterback. He's physically capable. So that's one thing. Now, I think what's going to happen is let's take a look and see where we are with our backups. Let's see how they look. Kind of compare notes to what we saw with Kaepernick. And I said it during my last live show. If the Raiders do end up signing Kaepernick, it's because he's going to be the clear number two, the clear backup. They're not going to sign him. They're not going to maybe potentially open themselves up to the headache or distraction, if you want to call it that, for a guy who's maybe third or fourth on the depth chart, and maybe he may play himself into the second spot. No.
Yeah.
If they do sign him, it's because he is the second option. I don't see them signing him and him not making the team.
The biggest thing that keeps me from thinking Colin Kaepernick will be a Raider is the fact that it's the Raiders, like the type of offense the Raiders run. Like I've said a million times, what do you want out of your backup quarterback? Two main things: run the same offense as the starter and be healthy. Right. Kaep generally stays pretty healthy, but his style of offense is very different than what Derek Carr does and what Josh McDaniels does. Now,
I don't know. In this respect, I agree with you in one respect as far as Derek Carr, but Josh McDaniels we talked about the running backs, how he uses the running backs differently. So he gets a running game also out of like a short passing game from his running backs. So we're going to see a lot more screens and shit like that out of our running backs.
I have no doubt that if like Kaepernick was the starter in a Josh McDaniels system, McDaniels would have something beautiful for him.
Exactly.
I have no doubt about that.
I don't think the offense is going to change all that much from Derek Carr running it to, let's say, if a Kaepernick, that the last Kaepernick that we saw when he was playing well, ran it. I think it's just maybe a little bit more run-centric, but it's still the same offense. I don't see that being huge differences.
If the Ravens or him going back to the, or if he went to like a Niners workout, then I'd be like, oh, he fits perfectly.
Oh, yeah.
That's exactly where he'd be able to flourish, right? Like that would make me say, this is more serious.
Or that dumpster fire they have going on in Seattle. Like, they have what he needs. They have a lot of strong, solid running backs. Mm-hmm. They put a lot of money into their offensive line, and they got two burners on the outsides. That's Kaepernick, what he thrives with.
Yeah.
So the fact that, I mean, I don't know what the hell Pete Carroll's doing over there, but shit, what the hell is he going to freaking roll through with freaking Drew Lock? That's going to be his dude.
And also, you look at, you know, like, San Francisco, the Bay Area, Seattle, like some of the most liberal parts of the country. Like a guy like Kaepernick would be like less of a lightning rod there than if he played for like, you know, Atlanta or, you know, Midwest somewhere.
Pete Carroll's 107 years old. What the fuck's he got to lose?
Yeah.
He's already got his chip. He's already respected. He's, you know, 99 years old. And just go out and do it. Yeah, you have all the cash, the cachet, all the weight in the city that you need to make a move like this. If the Raiders don't,
what do you think Kaepernick's salary demands are? He made $10 million his second to last season and $12 million his last season in 2015.
You get about five. You get about 4 to 5, a typical backup.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't think he'll ask for more?
He could ask for all he wants, but that's not what he's going to get offered.
Or make some kind of demand of a certain number. Do you think he'll be like, yeah, give me standard backup money? No problem.
Well, the thing is when you sit back on a podcast and you're like, you know what? I'm cool with being a backup. You have to be cool with being paid backup money.
Yeah.
Well, that's basically what you're saying. Okay. I'm cool with being paid backup money. I'm sure that the years that maybe there was preliminary talks going around where he was very staunch on wanting to be a starter again. I think it was because he still wanted that starter money. Mm-hmm. Now that the years are going by. Okay. Making it audible that you're willing to be a backup. It basically means also that you're willing to take backup money.
If it was like you said, Seattle, Niners, Ravens, I think this is more serious, but I just can't help but feel like after Mark Davis reiterated, yeah, we'll take a look at Kaepernick, a week later he's there. We don't hear anything from the Raiders side of things. It just feels like kind of like a token workout. Just kind of like,
well, I mean, they didn't have to do it though.
But it's a nice little F you to the NFL, which Mark Davis like really wants to, you know.
I mean, I guess, but I don't know, man. I don't know if is he that petty? Is he? You think
billionaires fighting with other billionaires? Yeah, they're that petty. Right. They're that petty. We'll see. Ready to do some what up windbags?
You know it.
Carlos and Fuego.
Carlos, my boy.
Everyone's boy. What can Ndamukong Suh bring? Teaching young guys to know how to treat their bodies and moves? I don't know. So he brought up an interesting point about Ndamukong Suh. He is not necessarily like a good teammate, which you've got like this beautiful petri dish of locker room cohesion with the Raiders. Ndamukong Suh doesn't really like fit that at all. I don't know if he's so bad he'd poison it, though. He might just kind of do his own thing and the other 52 guys can be a team.
Well, like I was saying earlier in the offseason, we have the type of locker room where you can add an Ndamukong Suh or add maybe an OBJ type player who has been known from the outside. I don't think we've ever heard of anything bad about OBJ as a teammate. I think his teammates really like him.
His teammates love, like he spends money on his teammates. Like you've heard of him giving gifts.
So I don't see there being an issue bringing a guy like Ndamukong Suh in because I think everyone sees what it is. This is a guy that can come in here and help us win. He's not bought into the culture. He's not bought into XYZ. Maybe not. Who knows? I'm not going to try to say yes or no. But if he comes in and does his own thing, fine. As long as he performs on Sunday, which is what AJ Hawk did, our very first interview, the guys that perform, the guys that produce pretty much can do what they want in the locker room. And if he's that guy, he can go in and do his thing.
We do kind of need a throwback Raiders player on the team. Like we really don't have one right now. Like Richie Incognito kind of was. There's not.
Well, wouldn't Kaepernick be like the modern age Jim Plunkett? Like high draft pick, highly touted, washed out in New England, kind of like floundering, gets put on the Raiders, wasn't the starter, became the starter, took him to 2 Super Bowls.
He'd be a good story, but I need like an asshole. You know what I mean? Like a dirty.
Ew. The fuck?
Not that kind of dirty.
You said dirty asshole. What the hell are you thinking?
How many clean assholes have you seen?
I've eaten a lot of clean assholes.
Not your own.
No, not mine.
Ivan Chavarria. Oh, God. I left for 4 months and Juan is still full car hater. And AJ, he called me AJ. Still dies by car.
Fucking AJ. fucking love that guy. RJ, not so much. AJ is a fucking man.
That's when I turn my hat backwards. AJ. Look, RJ. AJ.
Hey, what's up, AJ?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Where's
my dude right there?
Where's RJ? He's been gone. Yeah, what happened to him? At least I'm not AJ Soprano. God, that guy's a I'm rewatching The Sopranos for like the 17th time.
Uh-huh.
God, I forgot how much I hated AJ. Just a piece. Maybe it's because I'm a father now. A piece of shit. So lazy.
Some of those first season episodes are pretty rough, man.
You said that. They're not that. I mean, look, it was 1990. You also got to put it in the frame of reference, right? It was 1999.
But the thing is, like, I want to get to season three, like when it starts to get really, really good. So it's like having to rough.
It got good in season one. Season one, it got good right away.
But what I'm saying it wasn't is, a slow burn. Season three is probably one of my favorite seasons of Sopranos, but because it was like front to back, like packed.
I'll acknowledge that it got better, right? Like some shows go like this, you know, like Sopranos went like this.
And they were still kind of getting their footing. They're trying to be a little bit more comedy the first season. So some of those, but yeah, it is a little bit tougher for me because I know what's coming in the future. And every minute I spend watching a season one show, I'm not watching a better season show, you know?
And also how Adriana just gets hotter and hotter and hotter. And so you remember her from season five and you see her in season one.
Like, and you're like, you feel dirty. You're like, oh no.
Yeah, it's like, who did hair and makeup for season one? Like, Jesus. Yeah, God. Season four rolls around. You're just like, oh God, that's a 10.
I think maybe he's talking about this discussion that we had about Carr, the amount of credit he receives for our playoff push.
Probably.
I'll say it right now. Carr's leadership by far, unquestionable, undoubtedly a huge reason why we made the playoffs. That last season push, it was galvanizing. Everyone was together. Everyone was playing together. His physical play himself, maybe not so much because it wasn't great. It was probably one of his worst stretches of his season. But his leadership, galvanizing the team, for sure.
You'll never credit his play. Just the intangible.
You said it so yourself. He's the worst four-game stretch of the season was the last four games of the season.
No, not the Charger game. Charger game was lights out.
He was not lights out. He freaking threw for under 200 yards. He threw the ball 40 times for under 200 yards.
Played fantastic. How many points did we put up?
He had two touchdowns. I'm not going to lie to you. But he threw the ball, I think, 38 times for 186 yards. That's pitiful. That's not good.
Corey C., if I was Jacobs, I'd be mad. Damn near three 1,000-yard seasons in a row. That's disrespectful. He's damn near one of the best in the league. If I'm Josh Jacobs, I think mad is one of like four emotions I'm feeling, but I think it's mostly a rejuvenation, a firecracker up his ass. More something like that, because he wasn't going to get the $8 million or so that would come from being a Pro Bowl first rounder on a fifth year extension. Mm-hmm. He has to be smart enough to know he wasn't going to do that. I know those players in Alabama don't have to go to class that often, but Josh Jacobs ain't no dummy. He had to have known. Running backs are a dime a dozen, especially ones that get hurt every season.
Speaking of Alabama, did you see Nick Saban's little pitiful crybaby ass? Just because he's not getting his way with the NIL and other SEC schools have deeper pockets to pay their players. Now he's throwing a hissy fit because he talks shit on Deion Sanders. Like, can Deion Sanders get one five-star recruit? Like, he gets every single other one he wants, but he calls Deion Sanders out by name because he got one. Like, come on, fucking Nick Saban, you piece of shit. Take that, Nick Saban. Fuck you.
My favorite part about the whole thing is Nick Saban started all this. Was the Texas A&M coach?
Texas A&M. You're right.
Texas A&M. Yeah, he started this whole thing. He's the one that started it. He called out
him. He's a piece of shit, man.
Called out Texas A&M. He's like, you know, we're the number two recruiting class. Texas A&M was number one. And the reason was they gave their players $1 million. Like, he started this, like, out of nowhere. He was unprovoked, right? Mm-hmm. And then Jimbo Fisher comes back at him and he's like, hey,
I know where the bodies are buried.
Yeah, like, no, this is BS, blah, 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 blah. And then fucking he goes, I'm not going to say any more about the matter.
Fuck you.
You started it. You got this thing going. You got the ball rolling. One guy goes back and then Saban is all of a sudden like, you know what? I'm going to take the high road.
What a fucking in this conversation. Crybaby piece of shit Saban is. Dude, you have the best fucking recruiting class. You were paying your players before you could. And it's like, so now you don't play you don't have the resources to play the game the way other teams are playing it. And you don't really understand how to make it happen because you're an old fucking 70-year-old man. And you don't understand what freaking high school players going into college want to, how they want to be portrayed and how they want to be marketed. So you don't really get it. You know, it's not just giving somebody money. It's different. And
well, it's he sees the writing on the wall.
He lost control. He's lost control and he doesn't like it. He's a piece of shit. Now, getting back to the freaking question, I think who Jacob should be really mad at is John Gruden, because John Gruden was super predictable running the ball. That's why Jacobs had to have so much wear and tear to get those 1,000 or damn near 1,000 yards, because when's the last time he cracked 4 yards a carry? That's not good if you want to be called one of the top backs in the NFL. So here's the deal. In the NFL, you're one of the top backs or you're not. And you have to, if you have to try to convince somebody that you're a top back, you're not. It's very apparent who the top backs are, and then there's everybody else.
You know who should be mad at? All the highest paid running backs in football. Because like we just talked about earlier, no team is happy with what they've paid these really high running backs.
No.
Right? Christian McCaffrey, $16 million. Injured all the time. Ezekiel Elliott, way overpaid. Alvin Kamara, overpaid, injured. Dalvin Cook,
beats people up in Vegas.
Derrick Henry, I would actually pay $12 million a season for. I would pay that for Derrick Henry, even though he's going to give us, going to give you like 12, 13 games, even with that.
Well, yeah. And the way,
even with that, he's worth it.
With running backs, once they get hurt that first time, it's one of those things where they just keep getting hurt.
And that is who you should be mad at. Like if all these guys, like if Christian McCaffrey was like playing every season, you know, rushing for 2,000 yards and it's like, wow. Yeah. No buyer's remorse here. I'm glad we spent the money. Then I think you'd see more running backs getting paid. But because all these high-end running backs, it's just a ton of buyer's remorse, bunch of injuries, offenses are not really built around them anymore.
And you see when these guys get hurt, how drastically the offense has to change.
Yep.
I mean, when McCaffrey was healthy, freaking Darnold was, comeback player of the year candidate the first 5-6 weeks.
Yeah.
And now after that, I mean, he still had weapons, but it just didn't work because he didn't have the main cog of the offense.
No hard feelings, Jacobs. Just the economics of the position.
It is what it is.
You got drafted into a spot that you were not able to, like you're drafted into a position you could not have sustained. Just the fact of the matter. All right, that's it for us. By the time you guys are listening to this, I will probably be sitting in Kern River in Kernville, California. Ooh, camping
this weekend.
That's this weekend. I leave tomorrow. It's Wednesday night. I leave tomorrow. Can't wait to do it. And then next week, I'm going to be in the air flying to Singapore when we should be recording this one, because UFC is heading to Singapore next weekend. So we got to figure out how we're going to record this, or we're going to do it, or how. So we'll figure it out. We will do a show, but it may be a little different. I may have a couple Asian masseuses working on me while we're doing it.
I do like Asian ramen. Girls.
Yeah.
I do like Asian girls. I'll tell you that right now. I do like Asian girls.
Asian girls love me.
Yeah, because you're all-American look. Like, that's what you're light hair, light eyes, charm, white boy.
Debonair.
Get the fuck out of here.
Wide dick. All those things. I get it. No, I get it. Oh, yeah. We'll figure it out. But until then,
knock on wood if you're with me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Autumn Windbags. We really appreciate it. Make sure you follow us on social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all the good places. And, of course, YouTube for all the bonus content and live shows you can't get anywhere else. Until next time, later.